Proverbs 20. Let's look at verse 9 again. We left off there last time, but certainly worth mentioning again. Who can say I have made my heart clean, I am pure from my sin? And I do think there's a connection between that and 1 John chapter 1. 1 John chapter 1. John mentions there in verse 8, if we say that we have no sin, we deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us. If we confess our sins, He is faithful and just to forgive us of our sins and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. If we say that we have not sinned, we make Him a liar and His word is not in us. So the idea, all of us have sinned. And in our weakness, we're going to be tempted to sin again. To say that we are without sin and pure on our own without Christ, what are we doing to ourselves? We're lying. We are lying to ourselves, and if we swallow that stuff down, we'll believe anything. I think that's the same warning that we see back in Proverbs. None of us is pure and without sin all on his own. Can we be made pure? Yeah, but it's going to take Christ. It's going to take God's way for that to happen. None of us can do that on our own. We are helpless in that regard. I think of when we're talking about the Beatitudes, blessed are the poor in spirit. That's those who realize that spiritually, I have nothing to offer. Spiritually, I am bankrupt. Without Him, there's nothing. I can't earn anything for myself. It's going to take Him and His blessings. So I think the same idea, and I love it, getting to see in the wisdom literature of the Old Testament the same principle, the same idea that an apostle is speaking of in 1 John. So I know we talked about that one last week. Any thoughts on verse 9 or 1 John that you'd like to bring up? Okay, let's go on and look at verse 10 and 23. Very similar. Diverse weights and diverse measures, they are both alike, an abomination to the Lord. Verse 23, diverse weights are an abomination to the Lord, and dishonest scales are not good. To use craftiness, and in this case it would be inaccurate weights, to cheat someone else, how does God feel about it? Yeah, abomination. Which, what does it mean?
It's just a nasty sight. It's not
natural. Yeah, it makes him sick. It is unnatural. It makes God sick when he sees it. To cheat someone like that, it shows a lack of respect for God, right? He loves truth. He loves honesty. Who else does it show a lack of respect for? The people you're ripping off, right? What, can you honestly say that you love someone else and you are concerned for their well-being if you just rip them to pieces and take advantage of them? Can I honestly say, well, I love this guy, and that is why I'm taking him to the woodshed and just ripping him off? There's no way. There's a complete lack of love there. God hates that stuff. Mark your places and turn to Leviticus 19. Leviticus 19. God says the same thing here, but He adds a point to it that I think is very important. Leviticus 19, verse 36. You shall have honest scales, honest weights, an honest ephah, and an honest hin. Those are measurements, Hebrew measurements. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. So you shall do this. You shall do these things honestly. Honest scales, honest weights. Why?
I brought you in unhonest work. They were slaves.
Yeah.
They were working them to death. He doesn't want them doing it to each other.
Yeah. Don't cheat each other. It's interesting how simple he makes it. You are to do this because I am God. What does that have to do with them? And it goes back to a point that John just made.
He is totally honest.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no mistrust or anything in him. Mm-hmm. He's not selfish. This is another thing that shows, if you're taking advantage of other people, it shows your selfishness. You're not.
Sure.
You're going against the main purpose of God's will, and that's putting others before yourself. You're certainly not doing that if you're taking advantage of them with their money or whatever it is, that business dealings or whatever.
Yeah, good. He had brought them out of Egypt, right? He had made them His people. And if they're going to be His people, then who are they to act like? And if we're going to be His people, who are we to act like? And we're to imitate His character, the character of His Son. That's what He's saying. You're to have an honest scale and honest weights, because I'm honest and you're my people. You act like me. Act like my Son now for those of us under the new covenant. That's the same principle that He's making there. Yeah, Joe, go ahead.
I think what He's saying to us, we need to examine ourselves, look in our heart in everything we do. It doesn't have to be drastic. When you charge another person $100 for a lawnmower that's only worth 20, you've done the same thing.
Yep.
In your heart, you have exhibited to God the kind of heart you have. So I think what He's telling us is, look at everything we do. Make sure that we are clean. As one of the words that's worn out in today's society is that we're transparent in everything that we do.
Yeah, good. And that principle that Joe just mentioned, we're going to talk about it in a few verses. It comes up again, and that's a great application for it there. Good. Look at 11 and 12. Unless, any other comments on that? Let's put 11 and 12 together. Even a child is known by his deeds, whether what he does is pure and right. The hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord has made them both. We can say the right thing. We can say what's expected. We can even say what God likes. But our actions can be something completely different. You say the right things, but then you do something completely different. So it is interesting. You build a reputation. It starts at a young age and it'll follow you. If it's bad, especially, it'll follow you. In the context of verse 11, we've seen children mentioned before. Jesus takes and sets a child in front of His disciples there and says, be like this child. So what principles was He emphasizing there about that child?
Purity,
innocence, trusting. Yeah, all of those things. And in that sense, I need to be like a child. And I think there's another aspect too. Children are open and straightforward. You know, they're not, and especially if you look in the context of what we just looked at, trying to deceive others. I think of Anaya when we're watching TV. She could be watching football with me, and it'll flash to cheerleaders that aren't wearing anything, and she'll look at me and she'll say, Daddy, she needs to put some clothes on. She's naked. Well, yes, she is. She's right. And children will also say things like, they'll come up to you and say, why weren't you at services this morning? And, you know, we might hem and haw and say, well, you know, I just, no, I'd like to say something. I kind of, you know, I missed you. And what do kids say? Where were you? You were supposed to be here. And is there any guile behind that? There's no deceitfulness. They're just honestly wondering, you were supposed to be here. You weren't. What in the world's going on? That innocence and just that straightforward and openness. Those are good qualities. We'll get you in trouble. You better be careful what you say around kids, because they will come out and repeat it exactly. But if you train them right, then it's a good thing. Verse 12, putting with God made our eyes, He made our ears. So even though we can deceive others, I can't deceive Him. I can't deceive Him with my actions. I can't deceive Him with my words, because what does He see always?
See what we do.
Yeah. Goes back to the heart. He sees the heart of the man. He knows where it came from, where my actions originated, and I can't deceive Him in that. So, good. 14 and 15. This is what Joe was talking about earlier. Same principle presented right here in Proverbs 20, verse 14. It is good for nothing, cries the buyer, but when he has gone his way, then he boasts. There is gold and a multitude of rubies, but the lips of knowledge are a precious jewel. So, verse 14. It is good for nothing, cries the buyer, but when he has gone his way, then he boasts about it. So this is, and Joe gave a great example about the lawnmower. It's one thing to negotiate to get a good deal. That's okay, because I can get a good deal and the person selling it can still make a profit. Do businesses have to make profits? I mean, that's just a principle. We see it. There's nothing wrong with making a profit. Merchants have to do that. Can we both win? I get a good deal and they still make a profit. That's certainly can happen. But this is taking it, and somebody is selling something, and maybe they don't even know the value of it. It may be worth thousands, and they've got a price on there, and I say, you know, you got $1,000 on that thing. It's not even worth $500. And they don't know any better. And really, it's worth $5,000. And so they say, well, I didn't really know. Will you give me this for it? Well, I guess I will. I mean, you still kind of get me. And then you get it for a tenth of what it's worth, and you go off smiling. What have I just done?
You stole.
I have stolen. I mean, really? Isn't that what I've done? Because I took advantage of their lack of knowledge and just completely raked them over the coals with it. Again, making a profit is absolutely acceptable. God understands that. There's a difference between making a profit and taking somebody to the woodshed. And God certainly doesn't. He doesn't accept that kind of behavior. He expects His people to be better. And it's all based on deceit, because I am lying to them on top of everything else, right? I'm saying, this price is way too much, and I know it's way, way below what it should be. Again, there's so many sins going on there. God expects His people to be different. When you put 15 with it, the emphasis is on truth and knowledge. There is gold and a multitude of rubies, but the lips of knowledge are a precious jewel. Knowledge is more important. And when we get caught up thinking that gold and rubies are more important, we'll cheat people. We'll do things that are dishonest because we love those things, that money, that the power that comes with it, maybe, better than we care for the souls of our neighbors. And this is just something God has never accepted. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. Any? Say it just a little differently. When we usually talk about this subject, we come at it from a defensive point of view of it's okay to make a profit. And in fact, what we find throughout the scriptures is many of the people we read about in the scriptures were very good businessmen. Mm-hmm. And we should think about that not from a defensive posture, but from the point of view, it's good to make a profit. It's good to do good business. We find, you know, whether it was Joseph or many of the other, you know, characters in the Bible, that's what they did. And it's good, it's profitable. And we should think about that in a positive way, not in a negative, defensive way, which is how oftentimes when we talk about this subject, we tend to think about that. But we see the negatives where people have, you know, have done bad things, you know, ripped people off and that sort of stuff. And we tend to only focus on that, whereas the majority of it should be focused in a positive way, and that good business is a good thing. Yeah. It's a little different paradigm. It's a different way of thinking about it. But I've seen that throughout the years, that most times when we talk about this subject in study, we come at it from a negative point of view and not a positive.
We don't want to get caught up in the bad, so we may be overly defensive about it. Proverbs 31, the woman there, was she a good businesswoman?
Yes.
She's fantastic. She's just fantastic. Lydia, from all of what I can gather about Lydia, she apparently was a good businesswoman. She was from Thyatira there in Philippi. She just dealing as a dyer of purple. It would have required wealth to do that. So apparently she was too. And as Andy said, you can go through the list, and there were many of them. Put with that the thought of given by Paul to Timothy, those who are wealthy do good with it. So it brings with it a responsibility. But those who are given that wealth, is it a good thing? Can you do some good with wealth? Who can you help?
Lord's work.
You can certainly help the work of the Lord. You can help your brethren. I mentioned to you guys, I'm actually going there tomorrow, that camp in Russellville, Alabama, that is just, it's set aside for Christians to use to come there and have Bible studies like we're having this week. The people who own it are wealthy. What are they doing with that wealth? Providing opportunities for this week, preachers to come together and study. So we should see the positive side, use it for good. It is certainly a blessing. Abraham did okay, and he did a lot of good too. So certainly, good point, Andy. Thank you. Yeah. Any other thoughts? Look at verse 16. This one is interesting because at first glance it may seem like it's going against things that have previously been taught, but it's not. We just need to look at it a little more closely. Verse 16, take the garment of one who is surety for a stranger and hold it as a pledge when it is for a seductress. The law encouraged lending to the poor without taking interest or taking collateral. Just to back that up, go to Exodus 22. Exodus 22, someone will read 25 through 27 for us, please.
If you lend money to any of my people with you who is poor, you shall not be like a money lender to him, and you shall not exact interest from him. If ever you take your neighbor's cloak in pledge, you shall return it to him before the sun goes down. For that is his only covering, and it is his cloak for his body. And what else shall he sleep? And if he cries to me, I will hear, for I am compassionate.
Okay, so here. Don't charge interest to my people among you who are poor. And if you take a garment as a pledge, as collateral, as we would say, be sure to give it back to him, because he's going to have need of that. And yet when we go to Proverbs 20, verse 16, take the garment of one who is surety for a stranger, hold it as a pledge when it is for a seductress. And one of the things I love about the book of Proverbs is it emphasizes common sense. In the previous place in Exodus, it was talking about for my people who are poor and things like this. In this one, take the garment of one who is surety for a stranger or for a seductress. Be wise. This is not you doing it for a neighbor or for one who is poor. This is you doing it for someone who has become surety for somebody else. I mean, now it's on down the line. You don't know this guy. You don't know the kind of character. What kind of character would you associate with a seductress or a harlot? Not strong moral compass there. And what he seems to be saying is, don't be foolish. When you're dealing with people of questionable morals, the approach is different than when you're dealing with someone who is a neighbor whom you know and everything. So don't be foolish. Be wary and consider these things. Any thoughts on that? I don't want to take that out of context in any way. Does that make sense? And do we see the difference between the groups there that he's mentioning? Verse 17. Bread gained by deceit is sweet to a man, but afterward his mouth will be filled with gravel. At first, we might congratulate ourselves for outsmarting someone, you know, taking advantage of someone. There is a thrill of victory that could come with something like that. Sir, my family and I are starving. Could you spare us some bread? And he does. But we're not starving. I just said that because I knew he would give me something for free. And so you have this kind of feeling of victory. I got away with something. I did something here. But what happens later? What does it mean my mouth will be filled with gravel later on?
We have problems that you can't digest.
Yeah. How so, Bob?
Well, you have unexpected problems that you hadn't thought about it.
We reap what we sow, right? We reap what we sow. And if I sow deceitfulness and lies and cheating others, what will I reap?
Same thing.
It'll come back. And if you deal in that kind of wickedness, it has a way of finding its way around. I mean, just for example, if I cheat someone out of bread here, or whatever the case is, eventually you do it long enough, people will find out. Well, what's going to happen then? They're going to get tired of that. What happens to my reputation? If somebody doesn't poison my bread and I continue on, nobody's going to trust me. And then what happens if I really am in need of bread? And the day comes where I really do need. I'm begging and I'm not lying to you. I really need this. What happens? Tough, buddy. We fell for that before. I'm not falling for it again. So we can get ourselves into a position where we do need help. And our reputation is just destroyed, the ability to be able to find that help from others. Go ahead, Joe.
I guess I'm always leery about protecting my reputation and get from day to day. I'm risking my soul when I indulge in that behavior. Don't just wait around and think that consequences is going to be such that the matter that you have done wrongly is going to be rectified. Taking a chance when you do that.
Yeah.
If you're living honestly, you run from that kind of behavior. Someone has taught that in earlier principles. So I think we need to be very careful about what's coming from our heart when we indulge in any kind of questionable behavior. I think what is being addressed here is how we act among sisters and brothers. Those worldly people, those worldly behavior, they're out there. And if we can do something to influence and change that behavior and bring them out of that world, that's great. I think that's the indulgence, that's the behavior we ought to find ourselves as Christians in. And not so much as, I'm letting this more go for less than what it was, so what? If you're letting it go in such a way that it's not taking bread off the table for your children, then you've done good for somebody else. You didn't do it trying to make absolutely sure that you made a super business deal. I think that's something that we need to really stay away from.
How does God feel about it? We read about it in verse 10.
He don't like it.
Makes him sick, right? How should I feel about it? Should make me sick. If something makes you sick, do you go around it all the time? And if there's a certain smell that makes you sick to your stomach, do you burn that smell in your kitchen? I mean, what do you do with it? Is my question.
If something...
You do what?
You get rid of
it. Yeah, you stay away from it. Okay. So if God hates this, obviously He stays away from it. If I hate this like He does, what should I do? Don't even get close to it. I'm kind of in a gray area here. Why am I there? Put it away and do what's right. Do what I know is right, and we'll be fine. He'll take care of His people. He expects us to be honest. He expects us to be true. And He'll take care of us when we hurt. Go ahead, North.
I was thinking about sometimes when we're dealing with other people and when they use the word seek, we always think that we're smaller and more cunning than the person that we're dealing with. But sometimes, we can't look at a person hard and know what they know. And sometimes I think that get a lot of people in trouble if they always think that this person don't know what I'm doing. But and they end up getting him in trouble.
Yeah.
Because sometimes his thought is always trying to get something from that. And then that's what made me think about when he talks about that verse when it said, a bread gained by the seed is sweet, and afterward it might be filled with gravel. So he was one that get caught in the end, but by him being deceived.
Yeah. Worldliness is, it's a trap. Because we think we can overcome it. We think we can master it. And then what ends up happening when we're caught up in worldliness? Who's the master?
The devil.
The sin is. Yeah, I might think that I'm in control of it, but I'm not. I can't handle that. And so it sort of pulls the wool over my eyes. I think I'm doing all right. But then I get caught up in these things. And before I realize it, I'm the one being taken advantage of. So just stay away from that stuff. And then you don't have to worry about falling into that pit. Just stay away from it altogether. Good. Any other thoughts? Bye.
There used to be a man that had a reputation for going around buying things and reselling them. And my dad got killed on the tractor. Well, he found out about it. And he came over there to our house and he picked up some plows, fly foot scoops, scooters and scrapes. You might not know what those things are, but they go on the clock. Mm-hmm. And he came to my mom and said, how much would you take for these things? They're not any good. Mom said, if they're not any good, you put them right back where you got them.
Roy, did you have?
No, I was thinking sometimes, you know, people seem to think that there is reward in sinning. But the problem with that is it doesn't last very long. I think that's what he's talking about here. The bread seems sweet, but eventually it turns to gravel. So you talk to people who think, boy, I really got over on him. But then they go and find out that they might have been the one who got over.
Yeah, you know, I think when you mention that, I think of what's said about Moses. He gave up the passing pleasures of sin in Egypt. What could Moses have had in Egypt?
Almost anything.
He was a prince. I mean, he could have had anything he wanted, everything he wanted, and yet those things were passing. If Moses had chosen that, where would those things be today?
Well,
long gone, right? Moses has been dead a long time. So what about his crown? Where is it? Somebody stole that thing. I mean, they steal stuff from pyramids in Egypt all the time. Somebody stole that a long time ago. Where is his nation? Anybody fear Egypt as a world power today? Where is anything? If he had chosen that for a time, it would have been great. It would have been the lap of luxury and the best that life had to offer. And then he died. And it's empty. He chose the spiritual things. He chose God's things rather than those passing pleasures of sin. Then it goes right back to the point that Roy just made. So, good. Anything else? Well, Bob?
He probably wouldn't have been the lawgiver.
There's no way. No way. If he hadn't have put aside the physical and chosen the spiritual, certainly. He never would have been there to see that burning bush and to go over to it and see what it had to say to him. He would have been in a palace somewhere. Yeah. Good. Okay. Verse 18. Plans are established by counsel. By wise counsel, wage war. The tongue can be used to accomplish wise things. Seeking good advice, it's good for everyone. The example given here is specifically a king that is considering going to war. What would a wise king do before going to war?
Seek guidance. Make sure he's making the right decision.
Yeah. The wise king surrounded themselves with wise advisors. And they didn't just wake up one morning and say, you know what, I think we'll just go conquer these guys. It's Tuesday. It's Tuesday. Let's go. Let's go kill some people. Wise kings didn't do that. They weighed out the measure and they consulted with their wise advisors. That wise counsel, plans are established by counsel. A wise counsel should be used to wage war. Now make the application. Can you make a spiritual application out of that? Do you wage war, spiritually speaking? Every day. Every day we go to war. How should we wage it? According to wise counsel. What if I try to do it myself? You know, Satan. I'm not scared of him. He's got nothing on me. I can handle him all by myself. And then I go out. And I face him. And you never see me again because he swallows me whole. That's foolishness. And pride will lead us to think that we can do that thing. What would wise counsel be in waging that spiritual war?
Seeking God's counsel.
Yeah. Here, get some counsel. Get some counsel. Can I use my brethren as a source of wise counsel? Yeah, absolutely. John?
The devil knows God's word.
Yes, he does.
So if you don't go to it looking, he's going to have some tricky trick.
He's extremely good at twisting it, too. We saw him even try to do that with Jesus. If he'll try to do it with him, he will certainly do that with us. Good. Anything else on 18? On, 19. But he who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with one who flatters with his lips. So we just talked about how the tongue could be used to accomplish wise things by giving wise counsel, by heeding wise counsel. The tongue can certainly be misused as well. What is tale-bearing?
Gossip.
It's gossip. That's exactly what it is. It is destructive. So destructive. It's destructive in the church. It's destructive in the home. It's destructive at work, everywhere. It is just ruinous. We're warned here, when you know somebody is a tale-bearer, what should our reaction be to them?
Be careful what you say to them.
What was that about?
Be careful what you say to them.
Do not associate with them. Don't listen. Certainly don't talk to them. I mean, don't give them any more fuel. But don't listen to that stuff either. Be careful around them. This person flatters with their lips. What does that mean? I mean, I know we know what it means, but why does someone do that?
Gain your confidence, so you will tell them things that you shouldn't be telling.
Is it wrong to compliment people?
No.
There's a difference between complimenting and flattering with your lips, though. Because flattering with your lips, to butter someone up? Because you want something. You want to get something from them. And so you're just building toward that end. That's completely different. Robert Harkrider, I wrote down a quote that he said, "Do not say anything anywhere that you could not say lovingly and graciously to the person you're talking about." That's a pretty good rule of thumb. Don't say anything anywhere, because there are talebearers all around, and it could certainly be spread. And we might at first say, "Well, but what about a rebuke? Can you say a rebuke lovingly and graciously?"
Yeah.
You can. A lot of people don't, but you can. For example, you're studying with someone, you realize that they are they don't see the authority of the Scriptures, they don't see the need to obey the gospel, and you tell them, "I am afraid for your soul. And that if you don't humble yourself to this, I am afraid that your soul will end up in hell." Is it true?
Yeah.
Is that lovingly? With concern? Compare that to, "I told you what it said. You won't listen. And you're going to go to hell. So, it's your fault." Is there a difference? See, both are rebukes. Granted, both of those are rebukes. One is loving and with grace. The other is insanity. I mean, the other is just basically trying to turn somebody away. So we can do even that. Even a rebuke can come with, certainly it goes back to the heart, as Joe mentioned earlier. If we want to see souls saved, even when we rebuke, we'll do it with the intention of seeing souls saved, not to win an argument or not to just run somebody in the ground. Any comments on that?
Just like my mom used to say, it's not what you say, it's how you say it.
Yeah, and it's both. You know, to be fair, it's both. The content is important, but the heart behind the content, it makes all the difference in the world. You know, you can present somebody truth and do it so maliciously that it'll never plant a seed. Nothing good will come from that. So, good. Steve.
Romans 16:18, "For such persons do not serve our Lord Christ, but their own appetites. And by smooth talk and flattery, they deceive the hearts of the naive."
And if you go back one verse, "Now I urge you, brethren, note those who cause divisions and offenses contrary to the doctrine which you learned, and avoid them." Same principle that Solomon is teaching. Stay away from them. Don't associate with those who do this kind of stuff. Because, well, what can happen? I can get dragged into it too. I can, if I associate with them, I can get pulled into this and may even end up helping them unwittingly or purposefully. Good. Okay, let's look at 20. It's probably the last thing we have a chance to talk about this morning. "Whoever curses his father or mother, his lamp will be put out in deep darkness. Ephesians 6, verse 1, I'm just to give us some New Testament commentary on the principle. We've looked at it. We certainly understand it. "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. Honor, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. And here you have the opposite in verse 20. Whoever curses his father or mother, his lamp will be put out in deep darkness. What does that mean?
You're in fear of losing your soul.
Yeah. Well, if you are in the middle of deep darkness and your lamp goes out, what do you do now? Just feeling around completely lost, and make the spiritual application. If we treat our parents like that, it goes back to what Joe said. It's a heart issue, right? And if I treat them like that, what's my heart like toward my Heavenly Father? I have a hard time believing it's respectful if I won't respect my earthly parents. Where is my soul? I am in deep darkness without a lamp. Go ahead, John.
A lot of people are fortunate to have good parents. Some people have parents that are not so good. But you can learn. You can learn from it either way. You learn how not to be, yeah, how you need to be, but you still should obey them.
Yeah. There's a respect there for the very position, if you will. Is a decision made by a king always the right one? Can you still respect the position and the authority that God has given to it? You can't. So, good tie in there. Look at Leviticus 20. I'll take that back. Look at Exodus 21. Let's just read that one. Exodus 21. Someone read verse 17.
Whoever curses his father or his mother shall be put to death.
Okay. Tie this in with deep darkness. If my behavior is that way, ultimately, what is the deep darkness?
Yeah.
We're talking about Gehenna, ultimately. Hell. Hellfire for eternity. That's the darkness. The darkness and suffering and gnashing of teeth. That's where that kind of attitude will ultimately land me. Okay, we'll stop there and pick up there, Lord willing, in 2 weeks. Next week, Brian will be here preaching for us.